Case number 08-1196 et al. Westar Energy, Inc. et al. Petitioners versus Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Mr. Bregman for the petitioners, Ms. Henry for the respondent.
Good morning. May it please the court. I am Martin Bregman, and I appear today on behalf of Westar Energy, Inc., Kansas Gas and Electric Company, and the Empire District Electric Company. In March of 2005, FERC entered its ruling on our filings seeking an extension of our market-based rate authority. And in that order, applying its new market power tests, found that we had market power in certain areas which we will refer to as mitigated areas. We made a compliance filing, both companies made compliance filings in May of 2005, and in those filings we carved out from the areas where we could provide market-based rate sales areas or sales which would sink within the mitigated areas. That filing was patterned on a filing that had been made by AEP 3 months before, and that AEP filing was approved by the Commission in July of 2007. It then proceeded to accept five additional filings with exactly the same language from the period from July 2005 through February 2006. Then in March of 2006, March 17, 2006, in a Mid-American case, the Commission abruptly changed course and rejected sink-based mitigation.
Does the case boil down to whether the point-of-sale test is inherently arbitrary and capricious?
No, Your Honor.
Because you're not saying that.
What we're saying is that the way it was adopted in the Mid-American case and the way it was applied to Westar and Empire was arbitrary and capricious, was retroactive.
The test itself is permissible?
The Commission adopted the test in order number 697.
Right.
And it did
Is that permissible?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
But the difference is that in 697, there was a substantial record. There were comments made in a rulemaking over a period of about a year.
Okay, but if we break this down, if it was permissible, then it's permissible then to switch from the sink test at some point to the point of sale test, so long as they explain what they're doing.
Exactly. But what happened was in the Mid-American case, they didn't provide any explanation. Now, interestingly enough, the Commission in this case does say that they provided an explanation, and basically they say that explanation was tied to the earlier decision by the Commission in the Duke Energy case.
By the time you get to the last FERC ruling in this case, they've certainly explained that the rationale for the change was the inability to monitor with the old test.
By the time they got to the last decision, and by that last decision, I'm not sure if you're referring to our case.
Yes, in your case.
They certainly had. And
so
Your Honor,
the
had
problem,
they.
Then?
The problem is that The rule wasn't codified, wasn't adopted as a rule until July of 2007. And at that time, when they issued that decision in Order 697, the Commission made it very clear that they were making it prospective only. And in fact, in Order 697, at paragraph 822, the Commission stated, we also emphasize that the mitigation we adopt herein is prospective only. In response to Dalton's concern, we clarify that such mitigation does not modify, abrogate, or otherwise affect existing contractual arrangements. Your Honor, when When Westar became aware of the Mid-American case in March of 2006, we fairly quickly implemented that approach. And it was very easy to do that because all we had to do was to change where title passed. So the day after we implemented the new approach to be consistent with a test, with the point-of-sale approach adopted in the Mid-American case, we were making the same sales off the same power plants to the same customers. And the only difference was we made a change in our transaction documents that said instead of the title passing at the point at which the power plants are attached to the grid, the title would pass at or beyond a metered boundary in an area where the commission
found it. That seems an argument that the point-of-sale test is arbitrary and capricious, which you've said it's not.
Well, we're not. You don't have to reach that decision in order to rule in our favor. I think the commission's...
reach the opposite conclusion, it seems a lot of things follow from that, which are not helpful to your position.
Well, except for the fact that the commission allowed six other companies to implement sink-based mitigation in the months following our case, that the Mid-American case in March of 2006 was based on the Duke Energy case, which in the commission's brief at page 22, they admit didn't even address the sink-based test. They say it's not a problem because other cases did, but those other cases, the later cases, including cases issued that day, simply referenced the Mid-American case, which relied on the Duke case.
Why isn't it enough that in this case, in your case, the commission gave a reason for changing its view about sink-based rates? It said in your case it was changing it because, quote, it's unrealistic to believe that such sales, i.e. within the mitigated area, could be effectively monitored. Why isn't that enough?
There was no record in our case to establish that finding.
I thought you were simply arguing that there was no explanation for the commission's change in position.
There was no explanation for the
change. But I just read it to you.
I don't believe that's in the that's in the order on rehearing. I don't believe it's.
That's in your rehearing order.
Well, for one thing, Your Honor, that explanation was issued about 2 years after our filing was made. We operated under the sink-based approach and ran our business and entered into transactions for 9 months from our May filing until March of 2006 when the commission announced its change in position in the Mid-American case. And we had no notice that those transactions were inappropriate. And in fact, as we operated our business, we felt confident that we were doing the right thing, that we were following the commission's direction.
That relates to your argument about the refund, doesn't it?
Yes.
So maybe you want to talk about that.
Pardon me?
I said maybe you want to talk about that then, because you have really two different issues, right? I mean, even if you lose your argument that the commission didn't explain its position, you're still arguing that that the refund was inappropriate.
Yes, Your Honor. Whether or not the commission could move from the sink-based approach to the point-of-sale-based doesn't decide our decision, our case here, because this case really, we believe, is decided on the retroactivity issue and on the waiver issue. And on the retroactivity issue, this court has addressed that issue in the retail, wholesale, and department store union case, which set out a list of five, non-exhaustive list of five factors to be applied in determining whether or not a rule can be applied retroactively. And in the commission's action in this case fails all of those tests. Factor one is whether or not it's an issue of first impression. And it wasn't. This is an issue that the commission had decided over and over again from July of 2005 through February 2006, and then in March of 2007, it changed course. The second factor is whether or not it was a change of course, and of course I've addressed that. There was no warning that it was going to happen. There was simply a change in the March 2006 orders. The third factor is the extent to which the party against whom the new rule is applied, to whom the new rule is applied, relied upon it. And as I said, We're very aware of our need to comply with commission rules. We watched the commission's rulings, and the commission issued orders over and over again that indicated that we were, in fact, doing the right thing, and we relied on the commission's rulings through that period.
Did you raise your retroactivity argument with the commission?
Yes, we did. Both parties raised it. The FERC in its brief said that we had not raised it in the Westar brief, but that isn't the case. I don't have the page cite, but we mentioned that in our reply brief. It has been preserved. The fourth factor, the degree of burden on the party on which the retroactivity would apply, the total refund between these two companies would be $1 million, and we think that's a substantial burden. And the last factor is whether or not the statutory interest in applying, whether or not there is a statutory interest in applying the new rule, despite the reliance of the party on the old standard. But in this case, because the rule has been adopted prospectively, and because we've implemented the rule long before the commission acted in our cases, we don't see any basis for applying the rule retroactively. Even if the rule were to apply to Westar, we believe the commission abused its discretion by not granting a waiver. It gave absolutely no consideration to the request. Its entire discussion of the waiver in both orders consists of two sentences, where the commission says, "We disagree that refunds would be an undeserved windfall for off-system customers. Ordering refunds in this instance is consistent with the commission's policy that applicants that have a presumption of market power will have their rates prospectively made subject to refund." But under the WAIT radio case, this commission has to explain the reasons for not granting the waiver, and merely relying on its own policies.
Well, what about the first sentence? The first sentence you read, they said it wouldn't be windfalls. That's case specific. They said it wouldn't be windfalls. Didn't you just read that?
Yes.
Yeah, that's, you're right. The second sentence just relies on their general policy, but the first sentence is specific to this case.
Well, there's no explanation as to why refunds would not be undeserved. It's simply a conclusory statement that the refunds would not be undeserved.
It's obviously because that's the amount that would have been paid had the point of sale test been in effect.
That's true, except that all of those customers are sophisticated customers. They know what's going on. They read FERC orders just as we do. They were operating in a competitive market, and it was typical of the industry that sales were made this way since the market-based regime has been in place. It's typical and historically there's been the practice that sales are made at the point at which power is delivered into the grid. And that's not only is that consistent with industry practice, it's consistent with the FERC open access transmission tariff, which provides companies that have what's referred to as NIT service, Network Integrated Transmission Service, gives you firm transmission within the regional transmission area. And under the FERC tariff, a buyer can also get power from any generator within the Southwest Power Pool and move it on non-firm transmission for free from that location. And so they would buy from specific locations and bring the power to their load when there was an economic deal to be had under the FERC tariff. So this kind of practice where sales have been made at market-based rates within our control area, but with the power flowing out, has been practiced for as long as this program has been in place. And because that was the practice, I don't believe that there's no basis for claiming that the windfall, that is the discount that these customers would get, the refunds they would get, was one dessert that they would be deserving of. They knew what they were doing. They had other choices. And we're talking about, let me just explain this a little bit better. One of our customers is Entergy, which is a large multi-state power company. It serves customers in four states and has generating capacity about six times our capacity. Under this rule, we would sell power to Entergy. They would buy the power and take title to it within our control area. And under this rule, Entergy buying the power prior to March of 2006 could buy the power from us in our control area, take it to use its customers in Louisiana and Texas, and that would be an appropriate sale. After the rule was announced in March, we could do that same transaction with Entergy, but we can't. If they take title in our control area, they're entitled to a lower rate capped at cost, even though it's the same customer, five times as big as us, using the power in its own service territory. And because they had plenty of choices of where to buy their power, we clearly don't have market power over them. A refund to them, I think, is clearly undeserved, and the Commission didn't explain this statement in its ruling. That's not, Your Honor, Judge Tatel, that one sentence is not an explanation. It's a conclusion, and it doesn't meet the requirements under WAIT radio.
All right. Thank you. Ms. Henry?
Thank you.
May it please the Court, I'm Catherine Henry for the Commission. In this order, in this case, it's the Commission's position that the challenged orders did conform to the most recent precedent on the mitigation issue. And they also conformed to the policy that was announced in April and July 2004 in the AEP case. I think it's important to set up the context of these decisions. the Commission has granted market-based rates to utilities since the 1980s, but that authority was granted in a series of individual decisions. In addition, the industry had changed since the 1980s, and so the Commission decided that it should do really a generic rulemaking to address a number of issues in connection with market-based rates. There was no consistency, there was no codification, and so in 2004, the Commission initiated this generic rulemaking, which culminated in Order 697. A conscious parallel path, the Commission adopted an interim policy in the AEP orders. And I think it's important to note that the Commission, in its orders challenged here, relied to a large extent on the policy with respect to this issue that was in the AEP order. And specifically, I'd like to draw the Court's attention to JA-377. This is the order on rehearing in AEP in 2004. The Commission states that EEI, one of the commenters, had specifically argued that a market-based rate applicant should not be required to make sales at mitigated prices to power marketers or brokers without end-use customers in the relevant market. That is exactly what several utilities came in and proposed later, as well as Westar and Empire here. And then in responding to the EEI argument, this is JA-381, paragraph 147, the Commission stated, "We clarify that if an applicant is found to have market power in a control area, all sales made in that control area will be subject to the default mitigation, unless any commission-approved case-specific mitigation provides for different treatment. So the general policy with respect to all sales having to be made subject to mitigation in a control area was actually announced in 2004. After that, all utilities...
The sink test was applied until March of 2006.
The sink test was accepted in several of the mitigation proposals.
Then there was a switch in March of
2006. That's correct. The commission admitted in at least one of the orders, South Carolina Gas and Electric, as well as in Order 697, that those prior decisions were in error. Was very forthright about that.
What are the refund effective dates here?
Excuse me?
What are the refund effective dates here?
The refund effective dates for Westar and Empire mm-hmm. were established in the March 2005 orders that stated that Westar and Empire had failed the market power screens. The Empire refund period that the orders actually state that the refund effective date is going to be the earliest possible refund effective date. And that was 60 days from publishing in the Federal Register.
Is there a problem having the refund effective date before the date at which FERC switched its policy from accepting a sink test to a...
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I think that FERC routinely, when it rules on a filing, especially in a Section 206 context, will set a refund effective date and is authorized to set that as early as it feels necessary. In this case, to fully protect customers, the Commission said it would set it at the earliest allowable refund date, and that puts the applicants, including Westar and Empire, on notice that if they choose to go ahead and implement their proposal before it's been accepted, which is what happened here, before any of these proposals had been accepted, actually. No proposals had been accepted at the time that Westar and Empire submitted their mitigation proposal. But they were put on notice that if they chose to go ahead and implement that before it was accepted by FERC, that they were at risk for making refunds as of the refund effective date if those rates were later found not to be just and reasonable, which is what happened here. So the commission believes that that Empire and Westar were on notice early in this case. But to answer your question more specifically, the 60-day period for Empire began on May 26, 2005, and for Westar it was June 7th, 2005. That was the 60-day period after it was published in the Federal Register. So our contention is that this policy with respect to mitigation was really set early in this process in 2004, and that all parties who were following this were placed on notice. Again, there were many, many issues in this proceeding.
I don't think your case turns on that, but you keep saying it, and I'm going to keep interrupting, because it changed in 2006, right?
The policy did not change. The policy did not change. The policy was set in 2004.
You're referring to there?
That was the policy that stated that all sales made in a geographic area where the applicant had been found to have market power had to be made at mitigated prices.
Okay. But the sink test was viewed as consistent with that policy for some time, at least. It wasn't declined.
Well, the sink tests were not declined. They were not, it was not specifically addressed.
At some point, the sink test was viewed as inconsistent with the policy. I get what you're saying.
Right. So the policy, FERC did not change its policy in March 2006, but it did correct the earlier precedent to conform to the policy. And we believe that FERC explained in the initial orders that it was going to reject Empire and Westar's sink-based test. That was consistent with several decisions that had been issued right before. It was also, actually 3 to 6 months before the Empire and Westar decisions, because the the orders, the precedent was corrected in March 2006, the Empire and Westar orders, initial orders, were not issued until August and September 2006. And counsel for Westar and Empire has conceded that they were aware of when the precedent was corrected and began to change their practice of doing business to conform with that. On rehearing, Westar and Empire did raise the issue of inconsistency with the earlier decisions. In the rehearing order, the commission explained fully why it believed it was an error in those earlier decisions. That was also stated in some intervening cases, South Carolina Gas and Electric, South Carolina Electric and Gas, which was referenced in the rehearing orders, and as well as Order 697, which directly addressed this issue. So by the time the rehearing orders were issued here, the commission fully explained its departure from the earlier precedent, which the commission said, quite frankly, was in error. I'd like to just turn to the refund question quickly. We believe that the commission did not abuse its discretion here in ordering refunds. The general policy, as stated in Towns of Concord, which is cited in Westar and Empire's brief, states that the general policy is to grant full refunds where sales have been made in excess of the just and reasonable rate. The commission had followed this precedent, had followed this general policy in the orders that began in March 2006. In addition, I'd like to state that, like to clarify that the commission also ordered refund reports for at least two of the companies whose sink-based mitigation plans had been earlier accepted. And that was the LG&E case, and as well as the Carolina Power and Light case.
Is that true in all cases where sink tests had been previously accepted?
Well, there were about five cases that we know that the sink-based mitigation plan was accepted. Two of those cases were resolved by settlement. So there was no opportunity. It was AEP and the Duke case were both resolved by settlement. The Carolina Power and Florida Power actually incorporated the Carolina Power and Light decision. That was one of the companies that was in that sort of basket order. As I said, Carolina Power and Light later was ordered to file a refund report. Once it received its order stating that it could no longer apply the sink-based test. As I said, LG&E got the same treatment. That really accounts for all of the cases except for South Carolina Electric and Gas. And petitioners claim that they are similarly situated to South Carolina Electric and Gas, and that it was only fortuitous that South Carolina Electric and Gas did not make any market-based, any sales under the sink-based mitigation plan. I would say that fact was not fortuitous, but it was actually the deciding factor. The commission did not need to address the refund issue in that case, because there were no, because South Carolina Electric and Gas represented that it didn't make any sales that would have been subject to refund. It is not in the record, but it is interesting to note that a few months later, South Carolina Electric and Gas voluntarily came in and filed a refund report and said that it had made a mistake in stating that no sales had been made. It had discovered sales It believed, its refund report states that it believes it was consistent with MidAmerican, which was the first case in March 2006 to reject the sink-based test, and that it felt obligated to come in and file the refund report. That refund report was accepted by the commission. There was no order directing South Carolina Gas and Electric to come in and make that refund report, but nevertheless they did. So that just wraps up what happened in that case ultimately. If there are no further questions, I thank the court.
Does Mr. Bregman have any time? All right, why don't you take a minute?
Thank you. First, I want to address the statement by a counsel for the commission that their policy was established in the AEP orders in April and July of 2004. If that was the case, the commission didn't know that policy was created because it did issue six orders after that in 2005 and 2006. And if the commission wasn't aware that sink-based mitigation had been prohibited by its own order, it's hard to see how Westar and Empire could, or how it would be fair to apply that rule to them. They raised this issue at page 23. They discuss this in their brief at page 23, and they said that those orders aren't relevant because they merely accepted sink-based mitigation, and counsel said that again today. But that's not an accurate statement, because in the AEP case, that the commission, and that's it's reported in the, at it was issued on July 7th, 2005, and the site is 112 FERC, paragraph 61047. One of the interveners protested the filing and asked for a clarification of whether or not sales under Schedule A to it, OMPA was the customer, would be subject to a cost-based cap regardless of where the power went. Some of their purchases from under Schedule A would sink within the AEP SPP control area and some would not. And the commission addressed that issue. AEP responded by saying that only sales that sink within AEP would be subject to the cap. Sales under Schedule A would not. And the commission at paragraph 23 of that order accepted that representation. So the commission did, in fact, in one of these orders, address that. And then on rehearing, in an order that was issued on September 20th, 2005, and the site to that is 112 FERC, paragraph 61320, the commission dismissed arguments as moot insofar as they relate to market-based sales within the AEP SPP control area in light of AEP's compliance filing proposing a cost-based rate cap for sales of energy that sink within AEP SPP. So they did address the matter substantively on a couple of occasions. They didn't merely passively accept filings. And even if they did, I'm not sure that's a basis for us to be allowed to ignore commission decisions. One real quick point, which was, and Judge Tatel mentioned the rationale that was raised in the order on rehearing concerning the ability to monitor sales. That language does come from order, in the order on rehearing, which was issued in 2008, the commission adopted that rationale for the first time in our cases. And that rationale came from Order 697, which was issued in July of 2007, with prospective effect only. So again, with regard to notice, with regard to rationale, with regard to retroactivity, we believe that it would be inappropriate for these rulings to be applied to Westar and Empire. Thank you.
All right, thank you.